over the years, there's one piece of scripture that we, the Church of God, have explained, and maybe have taken this for granted. However, I heard another possible explanation that was mentioned to me, and which brought me up rather short. And I took another look at this subject to see whether there was anything in this different explanation. The title of the split sermon is Samuel and the Witch of Endor. So if you'll turn to 1 Samuel 28, this contains the story. You will recall that Saul was in desperate trouble. Samuel had died. Saul was greatly afraid because the Philistine army was a threat. Now we must remember that Saul had put out of the land all of the mediums and all the spiritists. And let's read first of all 1 Samuel 28 verse 3. It says, "Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land." Now having taken this course of action, what did Saul do? So desperate did he see his personal situation that he wanted to consult a medium. Not a wise course of action. Let's continue reading in verse 7. "Then Saul said to his servants, 'Find me a woman who is a medium, that I may go to her and inquire of her.' And his servants said to him, 'In fact, there is a woman who is a medium at Endor.' So Saul disguised himself and put on other clothes, and he went, and two men with him, and they came to the woman by night. And he said, 'Please conduct a seance for me, and bring up for me the one that I shall name to you.' Verse 9, "Then the woman said to him, 'Look, you know what Saul has done, how he has cut off the mediums and the spiritists from the land. Why then do you lay a snare for my life to cause me to die?' And Saul swore to her by the Lord, saying, 'As the Lord lives, no punishment shall come upon you for this thing.' Then the woman said, 'Whom shall I bring up for you?' And he said, 'Bring up Samuel for me.'" Verse 12, "When the woman saw Samuel, she cried out with a loud voice. And the woman spoke to Saul, saying, 'Why have you deceived me? For you are Saul.' And the king said to her, 'Do not be afraid. What did you see?' And the woman said to Saul, 'I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth.' So he said to her, 'What is his form?' And she said, 'An old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle.' And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down. Now Samuel said to Saul, 'Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?'" Now our explanation has always been that this was a demon, an evil spirit impersonating Saul. But the person who mentioned to me that our explanation may not necessarily have been correct mentioned that there were other instances where people were brought back to life for a short time, and that this could have been the case with Samuel. To date, only Jesus Christ has been resurrected to spirit life, that which awaits all of us if we endure to the end and make it into the kingdom of God. So let us have a look at a number of instances where people were brought back to temporary physiochemical life, albeit only temporarily. Let's have a look at these accounts. Please turn to 1 Kings 17 verse 17. This is the account where Elijah revived the widow's son. 1 Kings 17 verse 17. It says, "Now it happened after these things that the son of the woman who owned the house became sick, and his sickness was so serious that there was no breath left in him." No breath left in him obviously means that he died. It's as simple as that. Verse 18, "So she said to Elijah, 'What have I to do with you, O man of God? Have you come to me to bring my sin to remembrance and to kill my son?' And he said to her, 'Give me your son.' So he took him out of her arms and carried him to the upper room where he was staying and laid him on his own bed. Then he cried out to the Lord and said, 'O Lord my God, have you also brought tragedy on the widow with whom I lodge by killing her son? And he stretched himself out on the child three times and cried out to the Lord and said, O Lord my God, I pray, let this child's soul come back to him. Then the Lord heard the voice of Elijah, and the soul of the child came back to him, and he revived. Now the word soul is nephesh, and his life has connected with blood, our temporary physical life. Verse 23, And Elijah took the child and brought him down from the upper room into the house and gave him to his mother. And Elijah said, See, your son lives. A young child was restored to life, but would, of course, later, probably many years later, would die. The second example is in 2 Kings 4. 2 Kings 4, just over a few pages, where Elisha raised the Shunammite's son. This woman showed kindness to Elijah by providing a room for him whenever he was passing by, and he wanted to reciprocate that kindness. She and her husband had no children, and Elisha said that she would bear a son the same time the following year. She bore this son as promised, and we pick up the story in 2 Kings 4, verse 18. 2 Kings 4, verse 18. And the child grew. Now it happened one day that he went out to his father to the reapers. And he said to his father, My head, my head. So he said to a servant, Carry him to his mother. When he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on her knees till noon and then died. And she went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, shut the door upon him, and went out. Then the woman went to Elisha at Mount Carmel. Elisha and his servant Gehazi went back to the woman's house, and we pick up the story in verse 32. Verse 32. When Elisha came into the house, there was the child lying dead on his bed. And so he was dead. It just says so here. Verse 33. He went in therefore, shut the door behind the two of them, and prayed to the Lord. And he went up and lay on the child and put his mouth on his mouth, his eyes on his eyes, and his hands on his hands. And he stretched himself out on the child, and the flesh of the child became warm. He returned and walked back and forth in the house and again, and went up and stretched himself out on him. And then the child sneezed seven times, and the child opened his eyes. And he called Gehazi and said, Call this Shunammite woman. So he called her. And when she came in to him, he said, Pick up your son. So she went in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she picked up her son and went out. And so here we see another example of a young child being brought back to human life. Later on, Elisha died, but his dead bones had an amazing effect on another dead man. Just over a few pages in 2 Kings 13, 2 Kings 13, verses 20 to 21, we read this amazing story. 2 Kings 13, starting in verse 20. Then Elisha died, and they buried him, and the raiding bands from Moab invaded the land in the spring of the year. So it was, as they were burying a man, that suddenly they spied a band of raiders, and they put the man in the tomb of Elisha. And when the man was let down and touched the bones of Elisha, he revived and stood on his feet. There was no magic in Elisha's bones, but a demonstration of the power of God associated with his servant. Adams Clark's commentary says, This shows that the prophet did not perform his miracles by any powers of his own, but by the power of God. And he chose to honor his servant by making even his bones, obviously when he was dead, the instrument of another miracle after his death. Now, fourth example, we've seen three examples so far of people being brought back to physical life. A fourth example is Jairus' daughter in Mark 5. If you'll turn there, Mark 5, starting in verse 35. If you want to make a note, this account is also in Matthew chapter 9. But let's read the account in Mark 9. And this account starts just after Jesus has healed a woman of an issue of blood. Mark 5, verse 35. It says, while he was still speaking, some came from the ruler of the synagogue's house who said, your daughter is dead. Why trouble the teacher any further? As soon as Jesus heard the word that was spoken, he said to the ruler of the synagogue, do not be afraid, only believe. And he permitted no one to follow him except Peter, James, and John, the brother of James. Then he came to the house of the ruler of the synagogue and saw a tumult, and those who wept and wailed loudly. When he came in, he said to them, why make this commotion and weep? The child is not dead, but sleeping. And they ridiculed him. But when he had put them all outside, he took the father and the mother of the child and those who were there with him and entered where the child was lying. Then he took the child by the hand and said to her, Talithi Kumai, which is translated, little girl, I say to you, arise. Immediately the girl arose and walked, for she was 12 years of age, and they were overcome with great amazement. Here was a 12-year-old girl who had died, being raised to physical life again. Another wonderful miracle. Now, a fifth case that I want to bring to your attention is where many were brought back to physical life, albeit temporarily, and that's in Matthew 27. Matthew 27, verses 50 to 53. Matthew 27, starting in verse 50. Matthew 27, verse 50 says, and Jesus cried out again with a loud voice and yielded up his spirit. So this is where Jesus died on the stake. Then behold, the veil of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom, and the earth quaked, and the rocks were split, and the graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints who had fallen asleep, that is, died, were raised. And coming out of the graves after his resurrection, they went into the holy city and appeared to many. Now we had a question and answer on this a while ago, which said, we read in Matthew 27 verse 52 that many saints were raised at the time of Christ's death. How can Christ then be called the firstborn from the dead? Colossians 1:18. In brief, the answer was, the Nelson Bible study points out, because the Lord Jesus is the firstborn from the dead and the firstfruits of those who are asleep, these people could not have received their resurrection bodies. They probably were raised, as Lazarus was, to ordinary physical life. The fact that the people were raised appeared to many in the holy city implies that they had been contemporaries of the people who saw them. Christ is indeed the firstborn from the dead and the firstfruits of those who have fallen asleep. And that was the end of the quote. Of course, there are others who think that these resurrected people may have been from ages past. But that's another matter. The Bible doesn't give a specific explanation who they were. But the fact is that there were a number of people who were resurrected back to physical life. Of course, they're all dead again now, and they await the resurrection to spirit life. The next example is the son of the widow of Nain in Luke 7. If you'll turn to Luke 7, starting in verse 11. Luke 7, verse 11. Luke 7, verse 11 says, now it happened the day after that he went into a city called Nain, and many of his disciples went with him, and a large crowd. And when he came near the gate of the city, behold, a dead man was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a large crowd from the city was with her. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her and said to her, do not weep. Then he came and touched the open coffin, and those who carried him stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. So he who was dead sat up and began to speak, and he presented him to his mother. Now we read earlier in the chapter that Jesus was in Capernaum the previous day, and that Nain the following day. Verse 11. That is a matter of about 20 miles, and we can just read over that. But Jesus must have been fit to walk 20 miles in a day. But that's just an aside. Here we see another miracle of bringing someone who was dead and in his coffin back to human physical life. Another amazing miracle. And the seventh and last example I want to look at today is that of Lazarus. If you'll turn over to John chapter 11. This is a story that even those who have no interest in the Bible whatsoever will know well. So let's have a look at Lazarus in John chapter 11, starting in verse 1. Now a certain man was sick, Lazarus of Bethany, the town of Mary and her sister Martha. It was that Mary who anointed the Lord with fragrant oil and wiped his feet with her hair, whose brother Lazarus was sick. Therefore the sisters sent to him, saying, Lord, behold, he whom you love is sick. When Jesus heard that, he said, This sickness is not unto death, but for the glory of God, that the Son of God may be glorified through it. Jesus obviously knew that he was going to resurrect Lazarus by this statement and show another wonderful miracle. Verse 5. Now Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. So when he heard that he was sick, he stayed 2 more days in the place where he was. Then after this, he said to the disciples, Let us go to Judea again. Down to verse 11. These things he said, and after that he said to them, Our friend Lazarus sleeps, but I go that I may wake him up. Then the disciples said, Lord, if he sleeps, he will get well. However, Jesus spoke of his death, but they thought that he was speaking about taking rest in sleep. But just to confirm this fact, Jesus says in verse 14, Then Jesus said to them plainly, Lazarus is dead. Continuing in verse 17. So when Jesus came, he found that he had already been in the tomb 4 days. Now Bethany was near Jerusalem, about 2 miles away. And many of the Jews had joined the women around Martha and Mary to comfort them concerning their brother. Now Martha, as soon as she heard that Jesus was coming, went and met him, but Mary was sitting in the house. Now Martha said to Jesus, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. But even now I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. Jesus said to her, Your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection of the last day. On to verse 32. Then when Mary came where Jesus was and saw him, she fell down at his feet, saying to him, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. In other words, here Martha was saying the same thing in verse 21. And now Mary repeated this comment. Verse 33. Therefore, when Jesus saw her weeping and the Jews who came with her weeping, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. And he said, Where have you laid him? They said to him, Lord, come and see. Verse 35, the smallest verse in the Bible, Jesus wept. Then the Jews said, How he loved him. And some of them said, Could not this man who opened the eyes of the blind also have kept this man from dying? Now it's obvious from this comment that Jesus' miracles were acknowledged by some of them. Verse 38. Then Jesus again, groaning in himself, came to the tomb. It was a cave and a stone lay against it. Jesus said, Take away the stone. Martha, the sister of him who was dead, said to him, Lord, by this time there is a stench, for he has been dead 4 days. Jesus said to her, Did I not say to you that if you would believe, you would see the glory of God? Then they took away the stone from the place where the dead man was lying. And Jesus lifted up his eyes and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. And I know that you always hear me, because of the people who are standing by, I said this, that they may believe that you sent me. Now when he had said these things, he cried out with a loud voice, Lazarus, come forth. And he who had died came out bound hand and foot with grave clothes, and his face was wrapped with a cloth. Jesus said to them, Loose him and let him go. Now, what a miracle this was. Lazarus had been dead and in the tomb for 4 days, and here he was brought back to human, physical life. And so we've very quickly seen 7 other cases where someone, or in one case, many people, were resurrected back to physical life. And so from those examples, it would have been perfectly possible for Samuel to have been raised also back to human life. It would be possible. But is that what happened? Or has our original understanding been correct all along? Well, let's go back to 1 Samuel 28 and read what it says. Now, we read this at the beginning of this sermon, but let us now analyze it. 1 Samuel 28. And we'll start again in verse 3. Now Samuel had died, and all Israel had lamented for him and buried him in Ramah in his own city. And Saul had put the mediums and the spiritists out of the land. Saul was dead and buried. Now, if you just hold your place there, and if you'll turn to Ecclesiastes, I think it's just after Psalms and Proverbs, Ecclesiastes 9, verse 5. Let's have a look what it says here. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 5. Ecclesiastes 9, verse 5 says, "For the living know that they will die." Every one of us in this room today knows that we will die one day, but the dead know nothing, and they have no more reward, for the memory of them is forgotten. And in verse 10, "Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going." We also know, and I'm not going to turn there, Psalm 146 verse 4 says that at death one's thoughts perish. So back to 1 Samuel 28. And let's read some pivotal verses here, verses 4 to 6. It says, "Then the Philistines gathered together and came and encamped at Shunem. So Saul gathered all Israel together and they encamped at Gilboa. When Saul saw the army of the Philistines, he was afraid, and his heart trembled greatly. And when Saul inquired of the Lord did not answer him, either by dreams, or by Urim, or by the prophets." Now that's important. Let's read this. It says here, "The Lord did not answer Saul, either by dreams, or by Urim, or the prophets." So if the Lord did not answer him when Samuel the prophet was alive, and Acts 13 verse 20 tells us that Samuel was a prophet, why would he answer him when he was dead? It doesn't make sense. The spirit that spoke to Saul could not therefore have been Samuel. Down to verse 13. "And the king said to her, 'Do not be afraid. What did you see?' And the woman said to Saul, 'I saw a spirit ascending out of the earth.'" Now the witch didn't say that it was Samuel, but that she saw a spirit ascending out of the earth. But if she was a witch anyway, and led by the wrong spirit, if she had said that it was Samuel, it would have been a lie anyway. And of course we know that these evil spirits just tell lies anyway. Verse 14. "So he said to her, 'What is his form?' And she said, 'An old man is coming up, and he is covered with a mantle.' And Saul perceived that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed down." Paul perceived that it was Samuel. He didn't know, but obviously wanted his wish to come true. Verse 15. "Now Samuel said to Saul, 'Why have you disturbed me by bringing me up?' Here was a lying spirit impersonating Samuel. He couldn't have been Samuel, otherwise he would have answered Saul in the capacity of a prophet, and we know that that didn't happen. Our booklet, Do We Have an Immortal Soul, states on pages 38 and 39 the following, and let me just read this brief quote. "We read that Samuel, in inverted commas, answered Saul and told him that Saul would die the next day. The real Samuel, dead and in the grave, could not have known that. Earlier in this booklet, we learn that the dead know not anything." We just read that in Ecclesiastes 9 verse 5. But Satan and demons do sometimes know God's plan and purpose. And then we quote several scriptures to back that up. So it is clear that the demon, the familiar spirit, pretended to be Samuel and spoke as Samuel to the witch. Note in 1 Samuel 28 verse 7 that the woman was a medium. The Authorized Version renders it a woman with a familiar spirit. In the Hebrew it says literally that she was the possessor of a spirit, in other words, of a demon. We see then that apparently the very demon that had possessed the witch appeared to her, not to Saul, in the form of Samuel, convincing the witch, and through the witch, Saul, that he was in fact Samuel. The true Samuel, however, as a prophet and servant of God, would never have spoken to Saul through a witch, especially after God had refused to talk to Saul. And God would not have supernaturally brought Samuel, or his soul or spirit, back to life to allow him to speak to Saul through a witch, after God had refused to speak to Saul directly. End of quote. And that's exactly right. After God had refused to speak to Saul directly, and through his prophet Samuel when he was alive, why on earth would he speak through a witch, a medium, which is a practice condemned in the Bible? Let me repeat that. After God had refused to speak to Saul directly, and through his prophet Samuel when he was alive, why on earth would he speak through a witch, a medium, which is a practice that the Bible condemns? The concept that the souls or spirits of dead people can be contacted is demonic, and the Bible has much to say about that. If you turn to Deuteronomy 18, verses 9 to 12, we read here clear instructions about this matter. Deuteronomy 18, starting in verse 9, says, "When you come into the land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not learn to follow the abominations of those nations. There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or his daughter pass through the fire, or one who practices witchcraft, or a soothsayer, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer, or one who conjures spells, or a medium, or a spiritist, or one who calls up the dead. For all who do these things are an abomination to the Lord, and because of these abominations, the Lord your God drives them out from before you." So it's pretty conclusive that this sort of activity is not accepted by God. That should be clear enough for anyone to understand. In our former association many years ago, there were standard letters to answer questions that often arose. And one of those was about this subject. And let me read this standard letter that used to be sent out. It says, "Thank you for your question concerning 1 Samuel 28. There are many lessons here. Notice what happened. King Saul asked God about the impending battle with the Philistines, but God gave him no answer. In great fear, verse 5, Saul disguised himself and went to the witch at Endor, a woman who had contact with familiar spirits or demons. She asked, 'Whom shall I bring up unto you?' And he said, 'Bring me up Samuel.' The woman complied with Saul's request, or at least she performed some ritual which made it appear that she did. And when the woman saw Samuel, she cried with a loud voice, because she then realized she was dealing with King Saul and could well be in jeopardy of her life for practicing witchcraft. But Saul told her not to be afraid and asked what she had seen. She said, 'I saw a godlike being coming out of the earth.'" Verse 13, Jewish translation. "Saul then asked the woman, 'What form is he of?' And she said, 'An old man comes up, and he is covered with a mantle.' And Saul perceived," that is thought, "that it was Samuel, and he stooped with his face to the ground and bowed himself." In describing what she saw, the woman used these expressions: a godlike being, an old man, and he is covered with a mantle. There is not one word that it was actually Samuel himself. What did she see? She saw an evil spirit which presented itself in a way in which it could be mistaken for Samuel. The Bible reveals that Satan is the prince of the power of the air. He is the god of this world and can transform himself into an angel of light. Satan and his demons have the power to produce apparitions and to appear in human or animal forms. The next question in 1 Samuel 28 arises over verse 15. And Samuel said to Saul, "Why have you disquieted me to bring me up?" Why does the account read as though Samuel was speaking to Saul? It is merely a matter of what Saul wanted to see and hear. Demons enjoy fooling people. This one took the opportunity to play into Saul's hand by impersonating Samuel. It apparently knew the outcome of the battle and told Saul that he would die the following day and that his army would be defeated by the Philistines. Deception is one of Satan's devices, Revelation 12:9. 1 Samuel 28 records that Samuel spoke, although it was actually a demon speaking through what looked like a human. Samuel was not there, either in body or spirit. He was, and still is, dead, and in his grave awaiting the resurrection. This account is written, at least in part, from the human point of view. That is the way it appeared to the witch and to Saul. This scripture in no way contradicts the multitude of clear scriptures proving that the soul is mortal. And that's the end of the letter. And so, coming back to my original question about whether our original understanding had been correct, that this was a demon, an evil spirit impersonating Samuel. We have seen a number of instances today, briefly, where people were brought back to life, for a short time, and then of course died later. But our investigation has shown that this could not have been the case with Samuel, and for a number of reasons that have been proved from the Bible. First of all, God refused to speak to Saul directly through dreams. That's in verse 6. Secondly, God had refused to speak to Saul by Urim, that is the Urim and Thummim, which were mediums through which the high priest ascertained God's will in any important matter. Thirdly, God refused to speak to Paul by the prophets through Samuel. Fourthly, God specifically condemned witchcraft, sorcery, mediums, and spiritists that we read in Deuteronomy 18. And so why would he use a process that he condemns so forcibly? And fifthly, God does not use demonic spirits to raise the dead. This is compelling evidence that this was not Samuel raised from the dead, but a lying spirit. By putting all of the evidence together, it is quite clear, it is quite evident, that our understanding of many years still rings true.